Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear about Stillwater's contributions to the military and get an update on presumptive illnesses from our county veteran service officers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon Network is an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon Network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program is vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. You help ensure our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you're ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. That's beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is retired Lieutenant Colonel Jack Johnson, who served in the Minnesota Army National Guard for 24 years as a part-time soldier and 10 years as the Minnesota National Guard's command historian. He also played a key role in establishing the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley and was on the museum's, he was the museum's first curator and served on the museum board for 35 years. Colonel Johnson, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Sure. Can we start out? Can you tell me a little bit about your career with the Minnesota Army National Guard?
Well, I started with the unit up in Brainerd, which was the 194th Tank Battalion. I worked from there into for a while into Owatonna with the 1st Brigade Headquarters, and then ended up in State Headquarters doing a variety of things. But the last 10 years of my service, I was given an opportunity to be the command historian. I'd always had an interest in history. And it was decided that it was important for the Minnesota National Guard to have someone to kind of look after it. And they asked if I would be willing to take that position. And I said yes. I was eagerly took it and loved it. It was a wonderful job to have in the Guard. One of those jobs that you probably would have done even if they hadn't been paying you, but the pay was helpful along the way. Anyway, as part of that work, and I worked directly under James Sieben at that time. Eventually, Andriotti became the adjutant general.
General Jim Sieben. He was the adjutant general
He was the one who hired me. He was the one that suggested the kind of projects that I get involved in. And one of them was the Minnesota Military Museum, which was a very small little operation that had just gotten underway a few years earlier up at Camp Ripley. And I became involved in that. And that aspect of the job kind of became the major piece of it. And I played a fairly key role in getting that thing started and moving it from its original location out by the gate into the building that it's in now. So that's part of what I did in the Guard, and it was a great experience and a wonderful opportunity.
Sir, I understand you spent some time at Hamline University and at the University of Minnesota. Were you always interested in history?
Well, I always was interested in history, but my own educational background was in psychology, educational psychology. And I was at Hamline as one of the deans there for 17 years and then moved on to the University of Minnesota. My work was primarily in the area of continuing education programs, degree programs, credit programs for working adults, and summer session. That's what I did at the University of Minnesota.
We're speaking with Jack Johnson on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I want to ask you a little bit more about the Minnesota Military Museum. You were there. You were the first curator. Did the idea of that come from General Jim, or was there material coming in, or what caused that to be formed?
Well, actually, the idea had been around for quite a long time. Minnesota should have some kind of military museum. And when the Veterans Service Building was first built, the idea was that one wing was going to be a museum. But for whatever reason, that never came about. The Minnesota National Guard Association had a history committee. This was in the 1970s. And really, the germination for what became the Minnesota Military Museum grew out of that committee, which decided to create a 501c3
nonprofit
corporation, the Military Historical Society of Minnesota. And the committee functioned as the initial board of directors for that society. They managed, as part of a bicentennial project in 1976, to get a small group of artifacts together and create some exhibits, which they put on display in the old Serviceman's Center, which was just inside the gate at Camp Ripley. And that served as their entree into the museum business. And it began to grow. And I would say 1987, we moved into an old regimental headquarters building. We expanded it. I was pretty much involved at that point with the museum, serving as the board president, and then also helped to create all kinds of new exhibits, which it's been going and growing ever since.
And for our listeners, if you want to see the Minnesota Military Museum, it's located on Camp Ripley, up towards Brainerd. And you can go out there and go up to the front gate and ask the guard there that to let you in to go see the Minnesota Military Museum. And you can see the history of Minnesota, a lot of Minnesota people that have served in the military, and everything from the Civil War to World War I, to Korea, Vietnam, and even today's military.
That's right. That's right.
So it's a very interesting place. And I like to say, if you're up there fishing and you get a rainy day and you don't want to do that, get over to Camp Ripley.
Get over there and see it, because the thing that I hear all the time from people is, my God, when they see it finally, they make the trip to go in. They say, my God, I had no idea that you had a museum of this quality and character up here at Camp Ripley. It's wonderful.
And weapons and cannons and tanks and helicopters, there's everything there.
There's lots of stuff, but we also tell the stories that go with it.
Yes, sir. It's well worth the trip, so please take a day and stop in there. Now, sir, we've just got a couple of minutes left in this segment. We wanted to talk today a little bit about the Stillwater Armory History Project. Can you tell me what that is?
Well, Stillwater has a new armory. The official name for it is Readiness Center, but we still call it the armory. The old armory had been built in 1922. And the walls of that old armory were covered with photographs, framed photographs and certificates and a variety of artifacts and things that have been accumulated there from the National Guard in Stillwater since the 19th century. And when it became clear that there was going to be a new armory, a small group got together. It was asked to get together and figure out, well, what should we do with all of this stuff? And, of course, the first idea was, well, we'll transfer it and we'll put it on the walls of the new armory. Well, that idea evolved into something a little more sophisticated. And I was brought into the committee to, since I'm from Stillwater and have some military history background, to serve as a coordinator for this group. And what they've done is they've created, or we are in the process of creating, we've already done quite a bit of it, but we're only about halfway through our work, of graphic panels that are on the walls that tell the story that go with all of these photographs. And we've been engaged in this process now for the last couple of years. The new armory opened up in spring of 2018. And so we've got a variety of things going that I'd be happy to tell you about.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk more about the Stillwater Armory History Project. We're speaking with Jack Johnson, retired Lieutenant Colonel from the Minnesota Army National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting today with Jack Johnson, who is a retired lieutenant colonel from the Minnesota Army National Guard, served as the National Guard's command historian for 10 years, served on the Minnesota Military Museum for 35 years, spent some time teaching. And now I think he's trying to be retired, but he keeps getting some things to do, like being involved in the Stillwater Armory History Project. You can't quite seem to get this retirement to work too well, can you, Jack?
No, it's a little hard, but you got to keep moving. So
you gotta have
keep doing
to do,
something.
Right?
Yeah, you aren't going to sit around and watch daytime TV all day.
And Stillwater's an interesting town, and they've got a lot of history with the military.
Yes, they do. Stillwater, of course, is one of Minnesota's oldest communities, and it's been around a long time, and there's always been great pride within the town itself in their history. People involved with history have made sure that they take care of the preservation of their buildings. Community itself is full of grand old houses, including one that my grandmother was born in 1884. It's still there. And the old armory, as I said, was filled with artifacts, photographs that needed to be preserved. And so we looked for ways to preserve that in the new armory when it opened up. All of the old pictures came down. We worked with the Minnesota Military Museum. They took all of those old photographs, these old panoramic pictures, many of them big things, did a high-quality scan of them, and then working with the scans and building the narrative stories around it, we've created a variety of exhibits in the new armory. The first one we did, which is the largest one to date, is what we call a timeline. There's a large hallway leading off of the lobby that's about 60 feet long. And along that hallway, there's a timeline exhibit that starts in the 1840s, begins with the first militia companies in Stillwater in the 1850s, moves through the Civil War and all of the other wars and things that have happened up to the current day. So that timeline exhibit was the first thing we did.
Sir, I think some people don't think too much about going back to the Civil War and when Minnesota was formed, but rivers were a key to navigation.
Absolutely.
So Fort Snelling and Stillwater and those type of locations are – that's the reason they're some of the oldest communities in the state.
Along the St. Croix and the Mississippi. That's right.
And yep. So there's a lot of deep, long history in Stillwater, and I'll bet it's fascinating to be involved in that.
Yes, it is. That's the fun part of this.
So the Stillwater Armory History Project, you've formed a group, a 10-member steering committee, as I understand it, to try to determine what can be done and what should be done?
Well, as I said, we did this timeline exhibit. Then we did one on Stillwater and the Civil War, which is in one of the classrooms that is very often used. We've done an exhibit on the murals of military murals of Joe Lutz Rawlins. That's kind of an interesting story. The American Legion Post 48 in Stillwater after World War II commissioned Joe Lutz Rawlins, who was a professor at the University of Minnesota, an art professor and an artist, to do a series of murals of scenes of World War I and World War II. And a few years later, she also did the Korean War. And they were in the downstairs bar of the American Legion Club. Well, when the club decided to move its bar upstairs into their building, the mural stayed downstairs because it was comprised of about 100 lineal feet of art, and they didn't know what to do with it. And so it stayed down in the basement in a storeroom and was kind of forgotten about. When it was decided that Stillwater should have a new armory, the Legion Post transferred all of those murals, took them down. They were on fiberboard, painted on fiberboard, gave them to the Washington County Historical Society, and the Minnesota National Guard agreed to find a place for them in the new armory. So one of the other jobs that we've done is we've put installed one of these murals now and told the story of how they came to be and about the artist. So you can learn about that. The other murals are in storage at the Armory. The project that we just finished, it hasn't been installed yet, but all of the writing and the work on it has been done, is on – we call it Comrades Forever. And it's clubs that have been formed by Stillwater veterans. So we talk about the various last man clubs that the town has had, the regimental associations, the VFW, the American Legion, all of these groups that have been organized in Stillwater by veterans so that they can maintain these bonds that they had as military people.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Jack Johnson on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, it seems like one of the first things you have to do over there is find out what materials, what things are available, and who has them.
That's right. And we've got a lot more stuff than we can display. So this is going to be a long-term project for us.
There'll be no retirement for you, Jack.
Well, I think we'll be involved with it for quite a while when we decide, well, what should we do with this? Well, there are usually good ideas that come up. I work with a wonderful committee, a steering committee of 10 people. And I've never had such a wonderful committee because they're all active. They all play their part, do the kinds of things that need to be done by a working committee. And they'll keep us going, I think, for quite a while.
So, sir, is the old Armory open for people to come visit?
Well, the old Armory has been sold, and okay. It's now closed, and there's nothing to see there. But the new Armory, absolutely. Of course, there is security now with all of Minnesota's armories. You can't just walk in the way you used to be able to do in the old days. You have to push a little button, but they will let you in. And the public uses that armory, the new armory, a lot. So you can just come to see the exhibits that are there, or you come for meetings and a variety of things that go on there. It's a community building.
So, sir, I've seen when I've been up at Camp Ripley where there's school buses parked outside of the Minnesota Military Museum. Do some of the schools come over and see the Armory in Stillwater?
I think we've had some school groups come over, and I believe that we'll be having more as we continue to develop these exhibits. But as of right now, I don't think there's been a lot of school groups.
Sir, you mentioned the Last Man's Club. I know there is at least one in Stillwater. Can you tell us what that's about?
Well, the story of the Last Man's Club really begins with a group after the Civil War. One of Stillwater's militia companies, which was called the Stillwater Guards, became Company B of the 1st Minnesota Infantry during the Civil War. And after the war was over, they got together. Actually, they got together for the first time as a group on the 25th anniversary of the Battle of First Bull Run, which is when that group first saw battle. And the men decided, well, let's form a club. And what they decided to do was create something that they called the Last Man's Club. They would meet annually every year on or around July 21st. And they would continue to do that until there was only one man left, the last man. Someone had donated a bottle of Burgundy wine, which always sat at the head table when they met. And the idea was that the last man would finally open the bottle and give a final toast to his fallen comrades. Another group also organized a last man's club from a Civil War group because there was another company of Stillwater people, Company C of the 8th Minnesota. So they formed one that they called the Last Two Man's Club. And the World War One group formed a Last Man's Club. They called it the Bully Beef Club because they had a can of unopened bully beef, which was a canned corned beef. The World War Two group has one, and there's still one left, the Korean War group, which there's about 10 members who are still alive. They still meet.
Each war had its own Last Man's Club. Still going
right.
on.
Still going on, yes.
Well, that's kind of fun to see down there. And I'll bet you're enjoying the opportunity to preserve some of this history.
Well, it is fun to preserve it and then to also have met some of these people. For example, the last man from the World War II group was a fellow by the name of Gene DeCurtins. And Gene just died last year. He was the last man at age 100. And he was a wonderful man to have gotten to know. I really appreciate that opportunity. And if I hadn't been involved in this project, I probably would never have met him.
Well, sir, I hope you spend a lot more years over there sifting through things and saving history for future generations and meeting a lot more of our veterans. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. That was Jack Johnson, retired Lieutenant Colonel from the Minnesota Army National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about presumptive illnesses with our county veteran service officers. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about presumptive illnesses with our favorite county veteran service officer. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
More than 500,000 Americans have been captured and turned as prisoners of war since the American Revolution. Prisoners of war have bravely endured the loss of the very freedom they have fought to defend at the hands of their captors. We take time to remember and pay respect to the prisoners of war who, through circumstances of war beyond their control, have been held captive by enemy forces. They have endured one of the greatest challenges one can face, the loss of personal liberty. Let us vow never to forget the sacrifices of our prisoners of war and their families have made for our freedom. Their courageous efforts have helped build the strong foundation we have today, which continues to drive us forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Greg Peterson, who is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and he's also the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Greg, welcome back to the studio.
Thanks a bunch. It's nice to be here, Tom.
Greg, as I recall, you spent a few years in the United States Air Force.
23, from high school graduation until I was 42 years old.
And what position did you serve in?
I was an aircraft loadmaster flying on the C-141 Starlifter, and then later on the big brand new C-17 Globemaster.
And those C-17s, they can haul some big equipment, can't they?
They sure can, and it doesn't even know it's inside. It's got a lot of power.
You get a few tanks in there?
Oh, yeah. Yep, about 170,000 pounds is its payload.
How many engines do they have?
Four.
Take a while to get off the ground occasionally?
No, it's designed for short field takeoffs and landings. They've got a lot of guts.
Powerful, and she goes.
Yep.
Well, that was great. 23 years in the Air Force, loadmaster. How did you get interested, and how did you become the Brown County Veteran Service Officer since what, 16 years?
Yep, 16 years. Well, my recruiter, who put me in the Air Force, became the Nicollet County Veteran Service Officer. And returning to Minnesota, didn't you visit with your recruiter when you came home on leave and things like that?
No, I can't say I did.
He was a great recruiter and became a good friend of my parents. And so then I would visit him in his county veteran service officer job in Nicollet County. And I kind of learned about it that way. But actually, when I got out of the service, I was working for the state of Minnesota at Security Hospital down in St. Peter. And the lady from the Workforce Center, now Career Force, called me and said, there's a job up here at the courthouse that I think you would be a good match. So, of course, I jumped at the opportunity, and there were 66 applicants, and they interviewed 10. And the next day they called me, and they said, we have a job for you.
Turns out that recruiter had a big impact on your life. Two long jobs.
Absolutely, and he's big with the DAV, and he got me in the DAV, too, and you know, we're still see each other frequently.
Greg, it's probably a good thing I didn't think about my recruiter when I got back from Vietnam, because I don't know if that had been a fun conversation
right,
or not, but I'm glad it worked out for you. Let's talk about the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I know there's a county veteran service officer in every county.
At least one.
And your purpose in life as a CVSO, County Veteran Service Officer, is to know everything veteran-related. So if a veteran walks in the door and has an issue related to their time in service, you know where to get help for them.
We sure do. And if we don't, you know, we have the internet at our fingertips, and we can keyword search it and get an answer on the spot. Usually for everybody that walks in the door, we have an answer. And there are still questions that we'll say, gosh, I never heard that one before, but before they leave the office, we will call another service officer. There's guys that are good with retirement benefits, and there's people that were in the Navy, and they might understand the blue water better. And so we can network and find out the right answers.
And one of the things we talk about is for our veterans out there to get a copy of their discharge certificate, their DD-214, and go have a visit with your county veteran service officer. Get that on file, and even if they don't have their discharge certificate, you can help them find it.
We can help them find it, and that's what we take as a script. We'll look at that. We'll go pore over it and see what they did in the service, time what they were in. I'll be looking for overseas tours. Different things, medals, Purple Heart Medal, Combat Infantry Badge, things like that. That'll trigger things in my mind. If I see a combat vet, then I'm going to start taking them down a path of perhaps service connection for post-traumatic stress. Were you injured in the service? Things like that.
We're speaking with Greg Peterson, the Brown County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. And Greg, one of the big things that you do as a county veteran service officer, if one of our veterans has a medical issue related to their time in the service, you can help them start a claim.
Right, we can. Some people in the public will think, why would you want to do that? But if you worked for a civilian company, one of the big companies here in Minnesota, and you were injured at work, you certainly would be looking for some benefits from them.
Workers' compensation,
right.
Something like that.
So VA disability is very much like workers' compensation.
And, of course, and we've talked before, in my condition, I served on the ground in Vietnam in the Air Force and was exposed to Agent Orange. We're going to talk about presumptive illnesses coming up. And I didn't want to bother with it because I had health coverage and all the rest of this, but a couple of guys came up and told me one day, we're going to file this claim, and you're going to go out to the VA, and they're going to take care of you. And I've been amazed. The Minneapolis VA hospital does just a marvelous job.
They do. I was there myself yesterday, and they're falling all over themselves saying, thank you for your service. It's kind of tough to get used to, but especially for guys in your war era that were not treated so well when they came back. The VA is there, and they are very friendly. That stigma is not even in the VA.
And of course, every different engagement we've been involved in had their different issues, just like Vietnam had, and we got burn pits today and all of those things. So the idea is, if you were exposed to something, if you were injured in the military, the promise that we need to keep as a nation is to take care of you, and they start with you, and you work very closely with the veteran service organizations that also advocate.
Very closely. We've got them on speed dial, and we call them frequently and ask a question once in a while. And even the VA, when we're on the internet, we can Skype with them and say, I've got this issue. And we have some key friends that work out for the VA, and they can just shoot back a quick answer much faster than calling the old days, calling up, leaving a message, waiting 4 days for a phone call.
So you all work together to help the veteran.
We do.
Get the benefits they've earned. And Greg, I want to talk just for a minute. Commissioner Herkey mentioned POWs. Fortunately, we don't have many prisoners of war anymore, but we're going to talk about presumptive diseases today, and there's a whole series of things that you do special for any of the POWs.
Absolutely. Yeah, because of their treatment, their poor diet when they were POWs, there are a host of illnesses later in life that they may succumb to that are linked to being a POW.
So a whole special set of benefits. If one of our service members was a POW, of course, World War II, we had a bunch of them. Korea, we had some. Vietnam, we had some. Fortunately, recently, we haven't lost too many people.
Right.
And so that's not as big an issue as it used to be. So one of the things that we're going to talk about when we come back from the break is presumptive illnesses and try to figure out what that actually means and what it means for different groups of veterans when we talk about Vietnam veterans or Gulf War veterans, those type of things. So we're speaking with Greg Peterson, president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and a Brown County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to dig into presumptive diseases. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today to Greg Peterson, who is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. And Greg, we've talked about this on the show before, but there's a county veteran service officer in every county, and their job is to be there and be ready to help any veteran that walks through the door with any kind of issue.
That's right. Minnesota state law put us in place 75 years ago to help the veterans receive the benefits for which they earned and are entitled.
And twice a year, you gather up all of your county veteran service officers and have a training session.
We do. That's coming up in March for our northern guys in Walker, and then in April in Mankato for southern CVSOs. And then in the fall, we all come together and have a big conference and training center.
Every time they do that, they learn about new laws, they learn about choice, they learn about all the things.
They sure do. We bring in some very big name speakers in VA law and medicine a myriad of things, even in local programs that are out there. So when we get back at the end of that training, we're up to speed for 2020.
Very good, sir. Now, the big question of the day, what qualifies a veteran to be eligible for a service-connected benefit package and to file a claim?
Service-connected is synonymous with disability, and disability is a weird word. I remember when I got out, I thought, I'm not disabled, but there had been many things that happened to me in the service. There are five ways to attain service connection with the VA. The first way is called direct. I break my ankle in the service, and I have problems with it. After getting out, it's in my records, it's a direct service connection. The second one is called a secondary condition. So let's say because of my broken ankle, now my gait has been altered and I also have hip pain, knee pain, low back pain. That can be service connected secondary to the original direct service connection. There's one called aggravation. This is always in place if someone comes into the service with an injury. A lot of big football players will have injured knees or legs, and they'll come into the service with those. But due to their military service, being crouched down on your knees, whether out in the field or on a steel floor of an airplane, that will aggravate a knee condition beyond what it would have if you hadn't have come in the service.
You're hauling a heavy rucksack for miles and miles and miles.
Jumping out of airplanes and impacting the ground. There's a fourth one. It's just called 1151. It's a weird way to call it, but that's the chapter in the federal law, 1151. It's really a medical malpractice. Your service connected for diabetes. You need an amputation of your left toe. You come out of surgery and your right toe is missing.
That wouldn't be good.
No, that wouldn't be good. But the VA would compensate you for their own mistake. It actually is a very rare one. I've only seen one in the 16 years I've been there. And then the last one is what we want to talk about, the presumption, the presumptives of being exposed to something in the military that then causes you disease later on in life.
And, of course, we're going to talk about presumptives. We're speaking with Greg Peterson, president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers on Minnesota Military Radio. Greg, we mentioned in the first segment that every theater of war, going back as far as you might want to go, has some different issues.
Right.
People say, okay, Vietnam, they know about Agent Orange. The current wars, Gulf Wars and so forth, they were burning the oil wells. They had issues with that, and then burn pits.
Yeah.
So no matter where you served or which time you served, we even heard about the Marines and the water.
At Camp Lejeune, I was going to talk about that too. Yeah, there is. There's still World War II veterans alive, and I know there are. There was presumptives for those that partook in nuclear testing out in the Bikini Atoll and things like that. Lots of cancers. I've had veterans in my own county that were subject to that.
So let's talk about that one. The atomic veterans, we call them.
Yep.
If they were in that area, in that region, and if they suffered from certain medical problems, then they were presumed to have been caused by exposure to
the radiation. Yeah, and there's some other radiation areas like out in the western Utah and other testing facilities in the United States. It's what they call ionizing radiation. It's from a detonation of an atomic bomb, not the radiation that a radar on an airplane beam goes across, although you could get burned from that, but it's a different kind of radiation. Very specific times. You had to be on ships or in desert testing. But if you've got a cancer, and I would say almost every cancer in the world can be tied to radiation excess, get in to see your county veteran service officer, bring a diagnosis and proof that you served there, and you'll get disability from the VA.
Okay, then, Greg, we want to get to Vietnam and exposure to Agent Orange. I think a lot of people listening to this show understand that there are conditions that if you have them, such as a prostate cancer, type 2 diabetes, those type of things, and you've served on the ground in country, those are presumed to have been caused by the exposure. And the Brown Water Navy, the river.
The Brown
Navy,
Water and the Blue Water now.
Were covered. Yep. And the first of this year, the Blue Water Navy, which are those that served on the ships in the ocean, if they were in certain places, now they're eligible as well.
Right, and there's a ship, the VA has a ship locator, and if we can put you on the ship in the ocean at that time, there are about 40 Agent Orange-related diseases. The most common that I see are prostate cancer, lung cancer, heart disease, diabetes, leukemia, and probably Parkinson's, probably the most. I had a case last year where a guy had liposarcoma, which is cancer of the fat cells. He actually died from it. And was his family ever relieved? He was a Blue Water vet. And I said, that's on the Agent Orange list. The new law is out. So his widow is already drawing the DIC benefit, the monthly compensation that's tax-free. And one of his two children can get some Minnesota education benefits, too.
Now, let's talk a minute about our buddies in the Navy. If you served in the Navy on a ship anywhere near Vietnam during that time, come visit your county veteran service officer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can help them determine whether
or not they could have been in the Marine Corps, and they possibly could have been in the Army, too, a station on a ship. A doctor, for example, may have been on a hospital ship off the coast of Vietnam, an Army doctor
position. The VA is accepting and processing those claims as of the first of this year.
They are, and they're doing a lot of them right here in St. Paul. As a matter of fact, St. Paul is doing all of the death-related claims, so we're really happy because the St. Paul VA is just full of great Minnesotans.
Greg, I want to bring us a little more current than Vietnam. We had the first Gulf War, and there's Gulf War syndrome and all kinds of things, but they had all of those oil rigs burning, and there was issues with some of them had lung issues and breathing issues. I don't know what's covered there.
I'm service connected for a Gulf War condition called IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, and GERD. You know, I get this burp up in this reflux disease. Those are presumptive conditions of the Gulf War.
Of the first Gulf War.
And yep.
That was, what, like 25 years ago, wasn't it?
It was in 90. It was quite a while ago,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And 90, 91. And when we're talking about Agent Orange, at first you had to be on the soil. Mm-hmm. Now it's out in the water. Well, with the Gulf War presumptives, you could be on the soil. You could be on a Navy ship. You could be on an airplane flying in the airspace and never even land in Kuwait or Iraq. So they've really widened that up, and there's a lot of Gulf War vets that are just they feel
lethargic.
Yeah, that's a better word than what I was thinking of. But they might have what's called chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or sleeping problems, sleeping disturbances, insomnia, sleep apnea, things like that. That's called a cluster of symptoms, and if you got it, you should go see your county veteran service officer. Now, we're always going to need proper medical documentation. It's not just, I think I've got this. We got to have medical documentation. That's a fact that the VA has to operate on.
So for our Gulf War veterans, if they have symptoms of fatigue, skin symptoms, headaches, muscle pain, joint pain, neurological symptoms, sleep disturbance, GI symptoms, go see your county veteran service officer.
Absolutely.
And what can happen.
And so if it's the spouse that's listening or the mom or the dad that's listening to this and you know your kid has got it, your son or daughter, get on them and get them in there to your county veteran service officer.
Now, Greg, the last question, we just got a couple of minutes left. The more current veterans that were over in Afghanistan and Kuwait and Iraq, they've got this burn pit issue.
Yeah, there's not really a presumptive list out yet for that, but that's being studied. But there are lung conditions. And so in these cases, we'd be looking more to the medical professional that's diagnosing them. And, you know, if the veteran can say, well, I was exposed to toxins from burn pits, and then we can show that based on where they're stationed. And the medical expert can say, it's of my opinion that what you've got is from that exposure, the veteran can get service connected with that.
So our veterans out there listening, doesn't matter if it was World War II, there's still a few of them alive, Korea, Vietnam, the first Gulf War, or the current, if they've got issues that tie back to their time in service and they can prove it, come see one of your partners, one of your county veteran service officers, and let's see what we can do.
Absolutely. There's a couple more conditions that people wouldn't think about. Multiple sclerosis. You can be out of the service 6 years and develop multiple sclerosis, and the VA will service-connect it as if it happened in the service because the symptoms were probably present. You can be out of the service 40 to 70 years, and that's not a fixed figure, and get Lou Gehrig's disease. Anyone that was in the service for 90 days and develops Lou Gehrig's disease is service-connected at 100% disability. That's $3,200 a month.
Greg, we're almost out of time, but we touched on the Marines and the water problem. If there's any Marines out there that have served in those camps that had those water issues, you want to see them too.
Absolutely. And there's benefits for their spouses or their family members. If they were stationed at Camp Lejeune for 30 days or more and a spouse develops a condition, the VA will pay for their treatment.
So you and your fellow County Veteran Service Officers are ready, willing, and able, and
this
waiting
is
to
what,
take care of our veterans.
Yeah, this is what we love doing. So we're really excited to help veterans come in the door and ask the question.
Very good, sir. Keep up the good work, and I hope to see you and your fellow County Veteran Service Officers this fall, and maybe we'll get up there and do another show from your fall conference.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. That was Greg Peterson, the president of the Association, Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. We're just about out of time. If you're a Minnesota veteran and like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Jack Johnson and Greg Peterson. Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we hear from our friends at Federal Premium Ammunition and get an update from the Commander's Task Force. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.